Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Tuesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 4-hour space station social. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border, Anchorage to Atlanta, Tuscaloosa to Tennessee, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, DA. Everything we saying, DA. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, guess what? Rocket can. Hey, we appreciate you dropping on by. Happy Tuesday, and it is a trash Tuesday. Next hour, we will take out our trash, but you can take out your trash all morning long. I'll read those on Twitter and also take your phone call. So, what is bugging you? What is irking you? What's stuck in your craw? Vent in a healthy fashion here aboard the mothership by simply tweeting at me, DA on CBS. Again, that's DA on CBS. Or you can do so also on the phones, as I mentioned. Here is your toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS. Again, that's 855-212-4227. Coming up this morning on the show, how about this? Let's do a little Discovery Channel. Deadliest Catch, Wild Bill. Captain Wild Bill is going to join us from the Deadliest Catch, new season coming out. We'll talk to Bill about the high seas, the deadliest catches, and everything in between. That's coming your way in hour number four. Elsewhere this morning on the show, the authorities hand down the charge against Britt Reed, Andy Reed's son, who was involved in that tragic accident, drinking and driving, and on Adderall as well, before the Super Bowl. We'll do that this hour on the program. Also, Julian Edelman decides to officially call it quits. We were just talking about him last week in detail because he got news that he would have to miss all of this upcoming season with the knee injury. We will talk about Edelman's career coming up an hour from now. Sean Payton is going to have a movie made about his life, played by Kevin James. Oh, this is just too perfect for the Da. We'll discuss that. The Eagles and Doug Peterson now have a war of anonymous sources. Yay! The Bucks sign another running back, because of course they did. And Stan Van Gundy may have found something with Zion at the point. All of that coming up this morning on the show. Plus, Steph Curry hits a remarkable milestone in his career, but the night is overshadowed by a difficult situation at the end of the game by Jamal Murray and an injury there, which we'll also talk about. So a lot to get to this morning on the show, as always. That phone number for Trash Tuesday, also good if you want to weigh in on any of those topics, 855-212-4227. I'll get to my thoughts on Jamal Murray coming up in just a few moments, but first, Sam Darnold, who met with the media yesterday for the first time since getting traded to the Carolina Panthers. And he was able to reflect a little bit on his time in New York. Wasn't long, but as the number three pick overall of the draft a couple of years ago, Sam Darnold obviously did not live up to those heightened expectations, or else he would still be there and the Jets wouldn't be shopping for a quarterback again at number two this year. Darnold said yesterday that when he was drafted by the Jets, getting drafted that high, his expectations were 20 years with the team and multiple Super Bowl championships. Now, knowing today's NFL and knowing the New York Jets organization, the first question is, was that even a realistic opportunity or possibility, or right from the jump, did Sam Darnold have it wrong? It is where we begin, your cold open.
My expectations were to go in there, play 20 years, and, you know, win Super Bowls. And, you know, that was the dream going in there. And but obviously it didn't work out. And so, but I'm thankful and, you know, just thankful for the opportunity that, you know, that organization gave me for the 3 years that I was with them.
What advice would you give that player going to this team, and what kind of a team do you believe that that next quarterback is coming into with the Jets?
Have fun and don't pay attention to the media. No, I'm joking, guys.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So for whatever it's worth, we actually had Sam Darnold in studio before that draft. And he came off as a really nice, really bright, really kind of mature individual where you could see absolutely hitching your wagon to drafting him and making him a franchise guy. And it was part of the reason I really liked him coming out of USC, but also because I thought that Darnold had the arm strength. I thought he had the poise. I thought he showed a lot of good things at USC, and that in the NFL, it would definitely translate. So I thought that Darnold was going to be the franchise guy. 3 years later, I still believe he can be, but of course, it's not a slam dunk, or else he would have done it in New York, even despite all the miserable situations around him. So Darnold absolutely has responsibility here. I think, though, when I view Darnold's his path through the Jets and where he is now, number one, on the backside of this, he has no more excuses. If Darnold doesn't succeed in Carolina, then he was never fit to succeed because he's got all of the pieces right now. He has an organization that wants him to be the franchise guy. They're not putting him out there to compete for the job. They want him to have the job. They have brought in one of his best targets when he was in New York, Robbie Anderson. He has two good wide receivers to throw to, and he has the best all-around back in the NFL in Christian McCaffrey. He also has an owner who is willing to spend money, David Tepper, who is frustrated 3 years into his own tenure as the owner of the Carolina Panthers that they have not been able to win more. So all of the situations, all of the parts of the situation in Carolina that could lead you to have success are there in place for Darnold to do it. On the front end of this, he was only 20 years old when he got drafted, and I think a couple of things happened. I do think if you look at Sam Darnold and where he was from a maturation process, I do think he was a little naive. And you hear some of it right there, that he thought it was going to be 20 years and multiple Super Bowls. And try not to pay attention to the media. I do think that Darnold, at only 20 years old, and only having a short amount of time at USC to really flash what he had, probably expected things to be a lot more flowery than they were. And in New York, specifically with the Jets, it is a negative perception. It is a negative community. They are always the stepsisters of New York in football because of the Giants. They're always going to have a more negative fan base because they have not been to a Super Bowl in 50 years. They're always going to have a more cynical media following then because they've always been the Jets, the mess of the Jets. When you walk into that situation and you're 20 years old, you might think everything's going to be fine, and then you realize, oh man, it's tough around here. Not to mention the football itself or the Jets themselves as players, as a coaching staff, and as the organization itself did not support him well. The two coaches, Todd Bowles, defensive guy, Adam Gase, a total idiot. The money that they spent on Le'Veon Bell, basically they lit it on fire because Gase didn't want to play Le'Veon Bell. Jamal Adams wanted out. I mean, there was a lot of things that were beyond Sam Darnold's control, but I do think he was a little naive coming to a situation, because I think if you're a rookie and you get drafted, yes, you want to believe, okay, this is my home. But you can't go into the situation expecting that to be your home. And I don't know where that line is for Darnold, but the players that get drafted by a team and spend 20 years and go to multiple Super Bowls are a really short list of players. You know, that is basically not even Tom Brady, because Brady had to move on at the end of his career. But we'll put Brady in there because he did spend 20 years there going to Super Bowls. But you're talking about Brady, Peyton Manning, kind of, because he had to move on to the end. Brett Favre, kind of, because he had to move on to the end. Ben Roethlisberger. You know, Drew Brees certainly didn't spend 20 years with the team that drafted him. Eli kind of didn't go to 20 years, more like 15. Phillip Rivers kind of, but didn't go to Super Bowls. My point is, there is a but on all of those guys' resumes from that beautiful, romantic idea of 20 years with a team in Super Bowls. And I think that these young guys need to come into the league and realize that nothing's guaranteed. Every year is work. Every year is a new journey, a new challenge. And don't put anything out there in front that could lead you to assuming it's going to be great. You just can't do that. And I think when you have unrealistic expectations, along with a really negative society, along with a really cynical media, then you end up getting a situation where it can crush you. And I'm not saying that Sam Darnold would have succeeded had he just measured or tempered his expectations, because I think, again, the Jets put a situation around him that was not conducive to succeeding. But I do think that these young guys, you know, you get drafted high and there's always this idea, oh, this is my team for life and we're going to go to Super Bowls. And maybe that takes a little bit of an edge off, or maybe that sinks your attitude, your enthusiasm, when it doesn't quite happen that way. And Darnold has to bear some brunt of this, because statistically speaking, he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL last year, in year three of his career and year two of that offensive system with that coach. So there is something there to Darnold, who was unable to rise above whatever the mess of the Jets was. I mean, they were a disaster. We were looking at them as the number one pick in the draft all season long. So I would caution the Trevor Lawrences of the world, the Zach Wilsons of the world, Justin Fields, and the rest of these cats that are going to be drafted in the first round high. Don't get ahead of yourself and think this is your team for 20 years and it's going to be hunky-dory. You put in the work right away and assume it's going to be hard. And I wonder if that part of it might have really helped Tom Brady. Because Brady gets drafted in the sixth round, and obviously he knows there is no guarantees at anything. There's no guarantee that I make the team out of the draft. There's no guarantee that I'm not on the street a year from now. Every day was a battle to stay on the field, to stay on the roster, to study your butt off and just wait for your moment. He had no delusions of, oh, I'm going to be here 20 years and win Super Bowls with the Patriots. There is no way he could have conceptualized that. From day one, he was grinding because he was worried and he was scared and he was, you know, survival mode. Now flip that around to Darnold saying, I thought I was going to be there 20 years and win Super Bowls. Peyton Manning might have thought the same thing, but I also doubt Peyton Manning thought that as well, because Peyton seemed to always be also driven by the fear of failure, which is why he studied so crazy for every defense and every situation ever. I would warn all these young guys coming out of the draft, man, don't assume anything. Assume that nothing's going to go right, and you've got to bust your ass every single day to make anything work. Your phone number is 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. Scary moment last night the Warriors got a victory last night over the Denver Nuggets, and now the Denver Nuggets have lost two games in a row that they're going to be really disappointed by, obviously blowing the 15-point lead against the Celtics the other night, where Boston just blew by him with a 31-3 run, 40-11 in a bit of a longer segment, and just crushed him at the end of the game, which was a little worrisome because you were on home floor and they'd come into the game on a red-hot streak. And now this, they lose to the Warriors last night when Steph has 53 to become the all-time leading scorer in Warriors franchise history. But the big news is not just that they lost, but they might have lost Jamal Murray for the season. Jamal Murray goes down in a heap at the end of this game. And I hate to see this. We all hate to see this at the end of a game that's already out of arm's length, out of reach for the Nuggets. You lose a guy, especially one who is as important to the team as Murray. But he goes down, looked like a non-contact injury, and trainers and the coaching staff kind of rushing out there. They offered him a wheelchair because he was writhing in pain. He declined it and hopped off of the court, but speculation is it might be really bad, like torn ACL bad, which means, of course, Jamal Murray's out of this season. And for a Nuggets team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year, and for a Nuggets franchise that thought that this was the year, which is why they made the move for Aaron Gordon, this is devastating. Because, frankly, if they don't have Jamal Murray, they don't stand a chance in the West. Gordon was a good pickup if they had Joker and Murray. If they don't have Jamal Murray, the dreams are dashed in Denver, which is just a crushing blow. So definitely let's hope that it is not a torn ACL. Murray has been in and out of the lineup this year anyway with some knee stuff. He had just come back. They're hoping it's a hyperextended knee. That would be great. At the moment, though, it certainly does not feel like a hyperextended knee with the way that he went down in a crumple last night. Terrible situation. Awful scene. And a really, really bad prognosis if he does not play for the Denver Nuggets for this postseason. When we come back here on the show, we've got your best audio of the day. How about that? It is time for a little sound check this morning. So stay right there. Coming up, we will hear about Sam Darnold from his head coach, his new head coach, Matt Rhule, and Luka Doncic on the NBA's playoff play-in tournament. Not a fan. D.A., CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember, you can watch the show at watchda.com. That is mobile friendly. If you want to watch the stream or on any device, you could watch us on the simulcast live in sparkling Technicolor each and every morning. Also, you could watch us on Twitch. Check out the CBS Sports Radio channel there to check out the simulcast of the show. We begin this soundcheck with Matt Rhule, Carolina Panthers head coach, after trading for Sam Darnold. Here is Coach Rhule's thoughts.
We believe in Sam. We believe in his skill set. We believe in his approach. As you talk to people that know him, he's tough-minded. He's competitive. And, you know, we're really hopeful that this will be a great place for him. And this will be a tremendous time for him in his career.
Yeah, like I said, there's no excuses for Sam Darnold at this point in time. Also, Matt Rhule is under some pressure with that type of contract to win. Now, this is only going to be year number two for Rhule, but when you have an owner that spent $2 billion, $2-plus billion with the team a couple of years ago, he has been searching for the franchise QB. He wants to turn this thing around. It is why he fired Ron Rivera. It is why he hired Matt Rhule and gave him that big deal. It's why he gave Matt Rhule all of that money, which is why they pulled the trigger on Sam Darnold, which is why they've been trying to trade for guys like Deshaun Watson. It's because they want to win. And so Darnold has the resources. Matt Rhule has the pressure. Now we get to see if that actually equates to something. And Christian McCaffrey has to stay on the field and healthy as well. Here's A.J. Hinch, Tigers manager. Remember, of course, he was the manager of the Houston Astros when they won the World Series. And then everybody rained hellfire down on them a little over a year ago because of the banging of trash cans. Banging on a trash can. Here is Hinch talking about returning to Houston for the first time to play his former team, the Astros.
I haven't let myself go there emotionally on returning to Houston until probably tonight after the game. You get into the land in the city. I go to a hotel that I have never stayed at before as a visiting person. But it's home for me, so there's a lot of emotions that are going to be involved.
It is so funny that at the time, this is two Januaries ago, this is before pandemic hit, so this is two Januaries ago, two Februaries ago, man, it is just nonstop ripping of the Houston Astros, and everybody is culpable, and everybody is guilty, and there's a scarlet letter on this franchise, a scarlet letter on this team. They're cheaters. They'll always be branded cheaters. The moment A.J. Hinch was available to be hired, he was. So while Hinch had to sit out the season as a cautionary tale last year, the moment another team could hire him, they did. So I really wonder about all this outrage around baseball. Was there? Is there? Players of that Astros team in 2017 that won the World Series were signed as free agents this year. So I wonder about, at the moment, the outrage around baseball, and then in reality, what people really thought. That after a year, the outrage subsided and everybody was a little tired of yelling about the Astros, suddenly it was, well, I guess it wasn't so bad. I mean, I guess we all do something like it. I mean, they were worse, but yeah, Hinch is a pretty good manager. And you know, those players are pretty good, I guess, without it. Pretty funny how that happened. And finally, here's Luka Doncic, who, looking at the Western Conference play-in playoff tournament, says, this is stupid.
I don't understand the idea of playing. You play 72 games to get in the playoffs, and then maybe you lose two in a row and you're out of the playoffs. So I don't see the point of that. But we're just trying here to get to the sixth spot, and I think that's our goal right now.
This is stupid!
Stupid! Woohoo! Well, look, I understand where Doncic is coming from. He's like, if we're going to play 72 games, why do we have to also play more games to get into the playoffs? Isn't that enough to get into the postseason? Isn't 72 games enough of a sample size? And the idea is for the NBA that every team between 7 and 10 is going to have a play-in mini tournament to make the final two spots of the playoffs. So the 7 and 8 seed is going to be up for competition between 7, 8, 9, and 10. And the reason, obviously, is that the NBA wants to include some juice at the end of the season. They want more games to sell as television partners. They want more content for fans to enjoy, and they want more hope for their teams. And this is basically wild card games, but that's the way you got to look at it. These are play-in games for no guarantees in the playoffs right before you get to the real playoffs. And I don't mind it. I thought that it worked last year. Now, last year was a little bit of a weird situation. Well, a lot bit of a weird situation. Vast understatement, DA. And that is that it was a pandemic and it was a shortened season and they were in the bubble and we didn't know what the playoffs were going to look like. But I think moving forward, it does make sense because, look, you want to incentivize being better than the 8 seed, and you also want to make just slipping into the playoffs to be crushed as a minnow against the shark that is the 1 seed to actually mean something. When you just have the 8 seed get into the playoffs and you know they're chum in the water for whoever the 1 is, at least give them a little mini tournament or mini moment before the playoffs begin so that it doesn't feel like, oh, just here's the sacrificial lamb that happened to finish 8th. Give them something to gun for, and then the best team in that little mini tournament gets to be the minnow. You get to compete to be the minnow in some fashion. And that is your sound check this morning. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Or on Twitter, hit us up on a Trash Tuesday, DA on CBS. Standing by with our headline of this morning is a kind sir. His name is Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, good morning. How we doing?
DA, good morning. We're doing well. We begin on a serious front, though, this morning. This world once again dealing with things far more important than wins and losses. The Twins, Timberwolves, and Wild did not play yesterday as Minneapolis dealt with a police officer killing Dante Wright during a traffic stop on Sunday. The city is still under curfew for another hour or so. The Twins and Red Sox are scheduled to resume their series today. Elsewhere on the diamond, the Reds were 3-0 winners in San Francisco last night. The Padres stayed hot, 6-2 in Pittsburgh. The Nats snapped their 5-game skid, 5-2 in St. Louis. And the Brewers beat the Cubs 6-3 on AL grass. Shohei Ohtani still hitting.
Here's a pitch to Shohei, and he rips that one down the right field side. That's going to take a bounce and hit off the wall. Ohtani is just driven in a pair with two outs. That is a huge hit right there for the Angels. And the Angels' lead increases to 6-3.
That's Terry Smith on Angels Radio. That two-run double left Ohtani's bat at 119 miles an hour, the fifth hardest ball hit since 2015. Anaheim won the game in KC 10-3. The White Sox, a 4-3 win over Cleveland. The Rays won. The Rangers, nothing, as Tyler Glasnow K'd 14 over 7 2/3. And the Yankees beat the Jays in Dunedin 3-1. Yankee center fielder Aaron Hicks took himself out of the lineup pregame because of the events in Minnesota. In the NBA last night, as we've already mentioned, Steph Curry passing Wilt Chamberlain for the most points in Warriors history. He had 53 total in a 116-107 home win over the Nuggets, who lost Jamal Murray to that left knee injury in the final minute. It looked bad. We should know for sure later today. The Suns hit 25 threes in a 126-120 home win over the Rockets. The Wizards snapped Utah's 24-game home winning streak, 125-121.
The Wizards of all teams did it. The crappy, awful, terrible Wizards went to Utah and won. The only team that can do that this year.
They also beat them in D.C., so apparently the Wizards are the Jazz kryptonite this year.
Well, the Jazz better hope they don't face the Wizards of the NBA Finals, or else they're toast.
Fingers crossed. The Pelicans outscored the Kings 117-110. The Sixers dumped the Mavs 113-95. Doc Rivers got 36 from Joel Embiid.
He was phenomenal in how aggressive he was. And he made right plays, you know, made some great plays out of the double team. Then they didn't want a double team, which with Joel, he got what he wanted.
The Sixers take a half-game lead on the Nets for number one in the East before they play tomorrow. College Poops, Colin Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels returning to Villanova for next season, both using the extra year of eligibility that everybody got because of COVID. Julian Edelman is retiring after 12 NFL seasons. His 118 postseason catches, the second most all-time. Edelman only played 6 games last season, and a report last week said he was unlikely to play a full season in 2021, all because of a nagging knee issue. Jadeveon Clowney did not visit the Browns yesterday as expected because of travel issues. He'll be in town tonight, and Cleveland.com expects them to complete a one-year agreement. On ice last night, the Avalanche beat the Coyotes 4-2. They've won 8 of 9. The Leafs' 6-game win streak ended in Montreal 4-2. The Ducks blanked the Sharks 4-0. And DC United reportedly hiring Lucy Rushton as GM. She'd be the second woman to hold that job in MLS history. Rushton has spent the last 5 years as Atlanta United's head of technical recruitment and analysis. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bogues. Again, your phone number is 855-212-4CBS. Mraz, we led off this hour talking about Sam Darnold and about those comments that he said, I thought he was going to be there 20 years and win Super Bowls. Now, we were both very high on Darnold coming out of USC. We both thought he was going to be the slam dunk franchise QB for the Jets to turn things around. Obviously, that did not happen. When you hear comments like that, and he also kind of joked and said, for the next guy, don't listen to the media and have fun. Is there a part of you that goes, oh, okay, maybe he was a little naive coming into the situation, or do you think it was just all the Jets that ruined Darnold?
I think it's both. I think that the Jets absolutely ruined Sam Darnold. When you hire Adam Gase, and he's supposed to be this offensive guy, and you've listened to Peyton Manning, you are going to have all this hope for what he's going to do for a young quarterback. And the proof is now in the pudding with Ryan Tannehill, how much better he's been since leaving Adam Gase, that Adam Gase is more of a quarterback ruiner than he is more of a quarterback
helper.
If
Darnold goes to Carolina and becomes really good again, we'll have both Tannehill and Darnold, and then you know that Gase's touch is kryptonite.
And by the way, that would surprise you? That wouldn't surprise me at all if Sam Darnold's successful in Carolina. Wouldn't. And also, look, the Jets had been basically flush with salary cap space the last 3 years. And for some reason, they became the one team in NFL history since free agency began, or at least since the rookie quarterback scale and rookie scale had changed, to not try to take advantage of spending big when a quarterback is on a rookie window. They left so much unused cap space and never truly supported Darnold, so much so that they let his best target, Robbie Anderson, leave last year despite a bunch of cap space that he's now rejoining in Carolina. They just failed to support him on any front. Now, could he rise above, as you mentioned, and defy all odds and show what a great quarterback he was? Of course. But I think that's where Darnold's naiveness came in, where I think he probably assumed, I'm the third overall pick, all my talent's going to take me. I'm assuming he was a hard worker. But there was probably a little bit of Darnold where I don't think he was prepared, as young as he was in the NFL, to understand the challenges that were in front of him, and the Jets did him no favors.
Yeah, it's interesting because Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, and I think when he was drafted, he was 23 years old. I think he was 23 at draft time. Darnold gets drafted by the Jets at 20. They both enter equally disastrous situations where you have to change the entire culture around with an unproven coach, etc., even though Bowles was a little bit more proven than Zach Taylor, obviously. But at the same time, you know you're walking into an organization that has not been used to winning and has not spent a lot of money up to that point in time. So Burrow walks in and is immediately like, I'm the guy. I'm the guy. Follow me. And they could all sense that, where Darnold was clearly not that type of alpha male. And maybe that just has to do, certainly personalities, but also years. I mean, think about how different you are as a senior in high school than as a sophomore in high school or a freshman in high school, which is the time period, the differential between Joe Burrow and Sam Darnold. So youth might have just played a factor, and Darnold was so young that he didn't quite get what he was up against in New York. When we come back here on the show, before the Super Bowl, the Thursday before, you had Britt Reid, Andy Reid's son, getting into that tragic accident that really hurt a young child, and he was drunk and on Adderall behind the wheel of that car. Well, we finally got the charges against him. We will talk about whether the charges went far enough next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
It's 2:30. Guys in there in the kitchen. Bing it a bang it a boom dong doom ding jump.
What the hell have you been doing for the last 3 hours?
I was trying to make it fit.
How?
I mean, honestly, overhead luggage. After a while, you give up, right?
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Don't give up, Marco Belletti. Keep trying to stuff that overhead bin full of that luggage. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio, 43 minutes past the hour. We thank you for being part of a Trash Tuesday. Send us your trashes. We'll do our trashes next hour. Hit us on Twitter with those trashes, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. You can also hit us up on the phones at 855-212-4227. Andy Reid's son, Britt Reid, should have never been on the Chiefs coaching staff. He did not have the credentials to be on that coaching staff, but he had had issues in the past with substance abuse and with direction and focus, and I'm sure that Andy Reid wanted to give him some type of structure, accountability, and so he put him on the staff of his Kansas City Chiefs team. But it was a mistake, a huge mistake, because Britt Reid also took advantage of that situation and blew it. And Britt Reid also, in this case, seriously injured another person. Britt Reid got behind the wheel of a car after leaving the facility of the Chiefs on the Thursday before the Super Bowl, when you would have to imagine the entire coaching staff should be in incredibly focused, lockdown, tunnel vision, Super Bowl mode, and got lit up and got drunk. And combined with taking his Adderall medication, got behind the wheel of a car. All of this is nightmarish. But on top of it, there is a car which had stalled, had car issues on the side of the highway where Britt Reid is entering the highway. And there's another car that had come to the scene to help that vehicle. And that car had a 5-year-old girl in it, and he slammed into that car, critically injuring that 5-year-old girl. There is no excuse for Britt Reid. Absolutely none. And there is no excuse, which is why I'm so hard on Tiger Woods is because I don't see it through the lens of let's protect this really popular golfer. I see it through the lens of you could have done what Britt Reed did three different times, Tiger. Three different times. You put everybody around you at risk behind the wheel of a car. When you really think about it, you get behind the wheel of a car and you do have a missile. You are guiding a missile. You are guiding a piece of machinery at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, wherever it is that you are driving, and it's thousands of pounds of metal hurtling through at pretty high speeds enough to be able to leave anybody's life in shambles in your wake. So this is where I come from on Tiger. I don't look at it as, hey, he didn't hurt anybody this time around except himself. I see it as the potential was deadly of what happened to Tiger, and he did it two other times. However, this time happened might have been different than the other two times, but this is three different times he put everybody around him on the road at significant risk. Britt Reed happened to do this and critically injure a five-year-old girl. The Jackson County Prosecutor's Office filed a Class D felony charge against him, stating that Reed, quote, operated a vehicle while under the influence of alcohol and acted with criminal negligence by driving at an excessive rate of speed. If convicted, Britt Reed would face a maximum of 7 years in prison. As part of his bond release, Britt Reed was ordered to not consume alcohol or visit any establishment where alcohol is the primary item sold. So basically, Britt Reed cannot go to any bars anymore. He must also report to a dependency services clinic for pretrial supervision, subject to random drug testing. He must use an alcohol monitoring device and a GPS monitoring device as well. Britt Reed's truck slammed into two vehicles on the side of the highway entrance ramp right around the Chiefs practice facility at Arrowhead, injuring five-year-old Ariel Young and another child inside one of those cars. Now imagine that it was your child, and you can understand why my blood boils on something like this. Those vehicles didn't do anything wrong. One vehicle's battery was dead. The other vehicle came to help and jumpstart that vehicle. And here's Britt Reed looped up on booze and drugs and driving behind the wheel of a car. Again, I just want to reference that this is Super Bowl week. If there was ever a time not to get looped up, it would probably be if you're on a coaching staff the Thursday before the biggest game of your life. That's why Britt Reed never belonged on that roster of that coaching staff. Never. He was never a coach. He was more Andy Reid's son that Andy was trying to save, basically. His blood alcohol was 113. Just to give you some sense, the legal limit is 0.08. He was at 113. That's drunk. He had told investigators he had two or three drinks and Adderall. I would say you don't get to 113 with two or three drinks unless you're a toddler. I'm not sure how much further they could have gone because thankfully nobody died in the crash. But there are no charges that would have been too strong for Britt Reed. The attorney for the little girl's family said yesterday that she's being treated at home and she's being fed through a feeding tube. There has been reports that this is a brain injury that will basically change her life and perhaps permanently be in some type of state like this. That's Britt Reed. So I think it's important just to note as a PSA, no matter what, do not do this. Whatever it takes, if it is calling an Uber, calling a Lyft, calling a cab, asking somebody to drive you home, or just walking, just don't do this. Because this little girl is eating through a tube right now because of Britt Reed. Because of Britt Reed, who should have never been in that situation where he had a facility to get boozed up on and thought that he was above the fray because he was a Kansas City Chiefs head coach, or for whatever reason. That might have not even been his reason. you know, if he wasn't a Kansas City Chiefs head coach, he might have just been at a bar doing the same exact thing. So I'm not here to say that he felt empowered because of it. But I will say that this, when you are a member of an organization like the Chiefs and the entire city pours their heart and soul into your team, then to totally throw all of that away by doing something as reckless as this can never, ever, ever be forgiven. Ever. It is not forgivable. It is unforgivable. And one thing that has not come out about this is that the Chiefs need to have done an investigation and the NFL into what Britt Reid was doing when he was at that facility. Because what you shouldn't ever have is a coach who's using your facility, your team office, to get boozed. That should never happen. And when the NFL is worth billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, and the Chiefs are worth billions of dollars, there needs to be some major, major protections against this. That if you knew that Britt Reid had had issues with alcohol, which he had over the course of his life, that he can't be around a facility, one that has Chiefs logo stamped all over it, to use as his party room. Even if it's just himself. Even if he just brings in his own 12-pack and pounds it himself and leaves, there has got to be protections against this. And I realize you can't protect everybody from themselves all of the time. But if he was boozing in their facility and leaving their facility and going to do this, then the Chiefs also are at a certain liability here for this little girl's life and that family's life, and making sure that family, that little girl, is taken care of for the rest of their lives. Because he was an employee of the Chiefs at that time, and he was getting liquored up at the facility and then doing this. That was your employee, and there has to be some culpability there that he did this on your grounds. Every part of the story makes me sick to my stomach. I don't know if it affected the Chiefs for the Super Bowl. I don't know. You know, there were some that theorized that. Some people get totally locked in, tunnel vision, something bad happens to their family or around them or their or themselves, and they're more focused to only focus on, you know, the task at hand. Some people, it gets to them. I can totally imagine the Chiefs being at a loss on the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before the freaking Super Bowl, knowing that one of their coaches, air quotes, got liquored up and nearly killed a little girl. I would imagine every one of them has exited the facility at that same intersection. So I would imagine that could really do some damage to you psychologically. I'm not saying that's the reason that they lost. I'm just saying, is it part of the reason? It could have been. Could it have been the reason that maybe Andy Reid was not quite all there Super Bowl Sunday? Could have been. There's a lot of reasons. I mean, the football part of it is not that important compared to a little girl's life, obviously. But since we talk about football here and we talk about sports here, that's going to be part of the conversation. Britt Reid should have never been on this coaching staff. He was not. He didn't have the credentials to be an NFL coach. And then you double back on the fact that, you know, this guy has had an issue for his entire life and was doing this at the facility and doing this to a truck that, you know, was carrying a little girl, another little kid in it, and happening right before the Super Bowl. And every part of this makes your blood boil. When we come back here on the show, lighter news. Julian Edelman says he's calling it quits. So let's put his career in perspective next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.